So before you go external, if you want to build a really strong community around your business, so if you want to build a business that has cult status, the very first thing and the most important thing is to look.
Welcome to Sales Bites. I'm Abby White. This week, we have the most phenomenal guest for you, and I cannot tell you how excited I am to share this episode with you. I am interviewing the incredible Tim Duggan, author of Killer Thinking and Cult Status, and formerly co-founder of Junkie Media, which he successfully grew, scaled, and sold to oMedia. There is so much in this episode for absolutely everybody, so I hope you have your pad, your pen, and you are ready to sit back and enjoy.
So what's some of your thoughts around how you cut through the noise?
I think the most important thing in cutting through the noise is having a unique position in the market. So why would someone come to you? And that was really important to us. So I launched a bunch of websites before we launched Junkie. So the first website I launched was a gay and lesbian community website called Same Same, and I was about 23 years old. And then we had music websites, we had travel websites, and every time we launched them, I really had to look at the market and figure out who is doing what well, what space can we kind of leave and not try to copy, and where is that opportunity to have a unique positioning. And so once we found the positioning, we then were really, really worked hard at figuring out what is unique tone of voice in that place as well. So I think if anyone is trying to figure out how to break through the noise, the worst possible thing you can do is copy someone else, or just try and make more noise. Like if you already believe that there is so much noise in the market, don't make more of it. Just either shut up or have something unique to say. I think tone of voice is probably the biggest brand differentiator that you can have, especially when there's a lot of competition, when products can be relatively generic out there, having that tone of voice and giving someone a reason to people want to love the things that they buy. Like we're handing our money over to somebody, and I want to hand my money. If I'm buying face cream, I want to hand it to a brand that I really love. And what makes up that love is who's made it, what it's made from, how it's packaged, how the marketing is, what its tone of voice is, of course, what the product does itself, but all of those other things kind of combine together to make up the brand. And I think if you only focus on the product or you only focus on the marketing without thinking about the whole holistic picture, you're really missing the trick. And some of the simplest lessons that I learned was, number one, that everything is sales. So every piece of content that you put out there, every press release you do, every award you win, every statement you make to the media, every product you launch, every single thing is sales. So every meeting that I had, even if I was meeting someone to talk about something in editorial, there's always an element of how does this add to sales? How is this going to affect revenue? How is this forging a relationship that we can use to hopefully grow the business? So that was one aspect that I found really important. The second one was we had a sales team of salespeople that would go out to sell advertising onto Junkie Media. And it's quite, you know, as you know, the process can sometimes be complicated. And we found it the best thing to do was to really try to focus on what is one or two key metrics that we could really look at as a way of kind of showing the health of the sales team. And so for us, for example, it was number of meetings in the diary. So generally, there was a pretty consistent correlation between how many meetings someone was doing and what the revenue they're writing at the end of that one month or quarter. And so therefore, any times when we looked around and we realized that revenue was dropping or it was going down, the one simple thing that we could do, and obviously it was the first in a whole series, was try to get as many meetings as we could and kind of get ourselves back out there.
Where do businesses even begin to start on a journey for cult status?
The first place to start is always internal. So before you go external, if you want to build a really strong community around your business, so if you want to build a business that has cult status, the very first thing and the most important thing is to look internally and ask yourself a bunch of questions. So the very first step in cult status, in like a seven-step process, is to think impact first. So have a think around what is the point of what I'm doing? Like, why am I getting up in the morning? Why am I wasting my time and my energy to do? And if you can figure out what that is, and you figure out internally what the impact that you want to have is, and in Cult Status, I talk about a really simple way of doing that is coming up with something called an impact statement, which is my aim in life is to popularize it and make it as commonplace as mission statements. It's a really simple thing that you can do to add on to the end of a mission statement that really qualifies and quantifies how much impact you're going to have if you are successful doing what you're doing. So I think that's the most important thing. If someone really wants to create a strong community, look internally first, figure out what impact you want to have, and then your job is just communicating that with as many people as possible and hoping that you find other people who also want to have that same impact, bring them together, and that is the start of a community. Pitfalls are running too far ahead and not thinking about your impact first, I think is a really important thing. Getting overwhelmed by how do you build a strong community? Oh my God, there's so many things going on and there's so many big decisions to make. But one of the steps I talk about in Cult Status is to question all the little things first. So kind of build up some of your confidence in some of the smaller ways and trying to figure out what are those things that are small things that have a big impact. There's a whole matrix I talk about in Cult Status. They're two of the biggest watch outs.
First thing that I noticed that stood out for me was I kind of didn't realize or appreciate at first that killer in the killer thinking was actually an acronym and then what it stood for. And I love that. So can you talk to us about what killer thinking means and the acronym that you used?
Yeah, sure thing. So the book started with me thinking through what do I think are some of the best ideas in the world? And I started calling up people and chasing them down. Everything from Movember, which I think is one of a brilliant idea, to a thing called La Ciclovia, which is in Bogota, where they shut down the streets of Bogota to cars every Sunday, and about 1 million people come out and use walk and cycle. And Keep Cup, which has obviously now kind of become its own generic term. And I was really intrigued with some of these businesses. So I spoke to the founders of them. And as I spoke to the founders, I started taking notes around what do these businesses have in common. I started then comparing all the notes. And when I'd done this dozens and dozens of times, a couple of things started jumping out at me. And I then fit all those things into the acronym KILLER, which fits nicely in for killer thinking. So KILLER stands for the best ideas in the world are kind, impactful, loved, lasting, easy, and repeatable. And it's a really simple way of remembering, almost as a checklist for you to go through or a filter to put things through. When you're thinking of an idea, to think of, is this idea kind? How can I make it kinder? Is this idea impactful? Is it loved, lasting, easy, and repeatable? And if you use that as a filter to put your ideas through, that is one of the ways that you can take a good idea, turn it into a great idea, and turn a great idea into a really killer idea.
This one actually really surprised me, I'll be really honest. I think that a lot of us, and I'm putting my hand up and including myself, think of, you know, there's really creative people and there's not so creative people, and we almost put ourselves in boxes. And when you know, so for some people, they might go, oh, well, you know, killer thinking, I'm just not that creative. I don't really, you know, that's not me. That's not my flair. But I love that you talked about creativity is a skill, and that you might, I'm going to butcher this, so I'll get you to talk to it, but you might just not have had the opportunity to show it yet. Can you talk to us about that? Because I've got to say, that was one of the things that I read and I went, oh, and I kind of called bullshit on myself that sometimes I've gone, oh, I'm not that creative. And I'm going to imagine a lot of people do fall into that bucket as well.
And Abby, I hate hearing someone say I'm not that creative. It kind of like makes me shudder almost, because we've been told that creativity is a talent, so not a skill. And so talent is something that you think you've either got it or you don't. Are you, you know, obviously you need to work at it, and then most creatives do. But there's this kind of like sense that creativity is something that you're either born with or you don't have it. And that is just bullshit. Creativity is a skill. It is a muscle. It's something that you work at. The people who consider themselves creative weren't born that way. They've just believed in themselves that I'm creative. I can paint. The first time they painted was pretty shit. The second time was slightly less shit. The third time, the 1,000th time, the 10,000th time was pretty good. And that's what it comes down to in creativity, coming up with ideas, refining ideas. Anyone can do it. You just need to practice. And the first part of that is having the mindset and empowering yourself to think, I am creative. I can come up with great ideas. And that is really, if there's one outtake from this book, it's for someone to pick it up who doesn't think they're creative, read this book and be like, you know what? I reckon I can come up with a good idea, and then use some of the techniques inside it to actually come up with some of your own ideas.
One of the parts that made me laugh as you were sort of stepping through some of your process around be your problems therapist. And I literally laughed out loud. I think my husband was trying to sleep and I'm reading and laughing because I just love how you put it, like that the language is just brilliant around it. So can you talk to us about be your problems therapist?
Yeah, this is probably one of the most important steps when you're trying to solve a creative problem. Is often we dive straight into the solution or dive straight into coming up with ideas or throwing something against a wall and seeing if it sticks. Whereas one of the most important steps and something that most of us gloss over is spending time understanding the problem better than anyone else. So how can we really get inside the problem? And the term is be your problems therapist. How can you really kind of get to know your problem and help solve some of its problems? And it's a step that if you often, you know, do a group creative ideation session or a brainstorm, often you might spend, I estimate, and having sat through hundreds of brainstorms over the years, 1%, 2% of the time looking at the problem, and you dive straight into what are the solutions. And instead, I think you should spend about a third of the time being your problems therapist, so really understanding what your problem is, about a third of the time doing the next step, which is called fit your own mask first, which is coming up with your own ideas by yourself without anyone else's preconceived notions. And then the final third of the time is then when you start plussing each other's ideas, which is when you start sharing the ideas with other people. Most of us dive straight into that third step and miss those first two steps.
But what else is there to killer execution so that that idea actually sees the light of day and we don't give up too soon?
So funnily enough, the very first outline of this book had equal times given to killer ideas and killer execution in the book. And the more I started writing that section, the more I started realizing that I was starting to go into kind of time management and project management and how to launch something. And there's a gazillion books out there that all explain how to do that better than I can. So instead, I think the two really important things that I looked at were the launch into a rising tide, which I spoke to, and then about feedback and around really listening to what people are saying. So whether it's the minimum viable product, the MVP, or whether it is you start talking to people about it and kind of gauging what their reaction is, or the iterations that you have once an idea is live and you keep tweaking it and tweaking it and tweaking it. I gave a really great example in the book of Linktree, I've worked and known the boys who started that and worked with them over many, many years. And they've done such an amazing job. And it all came from, they had another business. They saw this, which was which still exists as a digital music agency, a music digital content agency called Bolster. And they saw this need to create one link to put on their Instagram pages for their clients. They got one of their coders to code it up in a couple of hours. They launched it and they realized, wow, there's this real need for this. And then they kept on slowly iterating on the product, slowly started moving across more of their staff over to there, to now Linktree, the company that creates the link in bio and kind of really created that entire movement, is now valued at $1.something billion, and they've just built this really phenomenal business that has something like 30,000 people signing up every single day. And it's all because they listened to what the needs of their customers were. And they saw there was a need. And then once it was there, they kept on iterating to make it better.